Gavrilek, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
This is the Super Footy Podcast.
Welcome to the Super Footy Podcast, brought to you by Tab. It is, as it were, done and dusted, Ando and BT. The Tigers are the premiers for the second time in 3 years. It was pretty much one of the most one-sided grand finals we've ever seen, wasn't it, Ando?
Yeah, but and that's the easy thing to say, that it was boring. Brian can't say that because he's sitting there commentating for Channel 7. He doesn't want anyone to leave their seats. Unfortunately, quarter time, it was still close. Even halftime, was probably, five goals. But you knew what was going to happen, I guess, or we thought we knew what was going to happen. So what happens for you, Barge, when you're trying to keep the interest in a game that's so one-sided?
Oh, then you start looking for the individual highlights. I mean, the little things that guys do that are incredible, whether it's Martin or Pickett or whoever it is, you start looking for those little things. And also you start looking for the stories in the football. And people often say, oh, I wish these guys had just stopped talking and start commentating. Well, when the game's dead and buried, you know, if we were just to continue to commentate, it would be boring. So we've got to try and find stories. And luckily we had stories like Marlon Pickett and, you know, the Cochin situation and the debate on who's how good are these Richmond guys? Is it the new era? Is it equal to any other Richmond era of past and stories like that?
Well, it's not, because Richmond between 1967 and 74 won four premierships.
Yeah, but I'd break that into two, Ando. I'd say the 67-69, I'd put that in one package, and then I'd say the 73-74.
That's fair
I'd
enough.
Put that in a separate package. There's a fair bit of time between those.
Well, 72, they made the grand final in 72.
Yeah, they did. But I reckon there's a bit of time, and the teams changed quite a bit between those times. So I'd split those into two eras myself.
Surely this side needs a bit more yet before you start talking about it as a Hawthorn who made seven grand finals in a row in the 1980s. Melbourne made seven grand finals in a row in the 1950s.
I agree with that, but on when you compare it to just other Richmond eras, I would say it needs one more premiership, and she's away, no problems at all, and probably one of the greatest eras in Richmond's history if that were to happen. But comparing with others, they've got miles to go.
Well, because it's a different era too, isn't it? Obviously, national competition. Yeah, we've got 18 teams. We've got different drafts. We've got all that sort of thrown into the mix. And Benny Gale said as much at the family day on Sunday. They're hard to win now, aren't they?
Well, harder than ever before. Yeah. Because this year, effectively, you had Gold Coast who were useless, Melbourne who were next to useless, Carlton became competitive. So really, other than those two sides, every other team you could lose to at any given Saturday, Sunday, Friday night or Thursday night.
Or any other time slot of the week if Gil had his way, I'm sure. But Brian, you mentioned Marlon Pickett, Trent Cotchin, Dustin Martin there. What was your favourite moment of the day to call? Oh,
probably my moment was Marlon Pickett, I reckon, with his blind turn. It was a funny one because he wasn't sort of close enough to the player to actually do it. It was like he was fresh airing in the blind turn. But I just love the confidence to do that and the slow motion in which that was done and then the finishing kick on top of that as well. For me, that had to be my moment of the grand final for sure. What about your guys? You guys?
There was a kick. Cassania marked it, didn't he? Took a great mark.
Yes, he did.
I haven't seen a blind turn on a footy. You call a lot more footy than we do when
it
comes to any footy.
You just don't
see them. My moment, probably, I love the fact that Richmond had five Indigenous players in their team. We haven't made enough of that. So you've got Shai Bolton, obviously, Titch Edwards, Marlon Pickett came into it, Daniel Rioli, and tell me who the other one is quickly. Sydney Stack didn't actually make the team. Yeah. He will make it next year. He's going to play a fair bit of footy with them. But that Indigenous group, and they put I think it was Phil Egan, Barge, who started the Indigenous program at Richmond, and they've taken a punt on two players in Sydney Stack and Marlon Pickett that no other club would, because there was risk factor involved with them. And for Richmond to have brought those players across the country, them to fit it into their program, says so much for that club, more than any other single piece of Richmond, that's what impresses me the most.
Yeah, I'd love to know what goes through Daniel Rioli's head when he wakes up on the day of a final, because there's just something about Rioli's, isn't there? I know you guys make a lot of it, BT, too, in the commentary. They're just so special to watch. But
well, isn't there another one coming, Loz?
There's another one. There's a Maurice Rioli Jr. on his way through Scotch College at the moment. Yep. So I think he's not this draft, but next year. I think he's 16.
And I asked them about him recently. I'd seen him play in an APS game this year. And they said, look, he's got a fair way to go. Mm. I saw Willie Rioli 7 years ago. He was fatter than I am now, Willie Rioli. And there was no way known he was ever going to play AFL football. Willie Rioli became a premiership player and a star. Yeah. So players can change a lot, particularly when they have the natural gifts that those particular players do have.
Mm, Daniel made a point of saying after the game, it's 7 premierships among this crew of Riolis. So they're certainly keeping count, and he's definitely wanting to add to that. Trent Cotchin was probably my highlight. A bit of a double whammy, really. The tackle on Shane Mumford, I think, really set the tone. Obviously, ended up giving away a free kick, I think, thanks to his mate Dion Prestia falling on top of the Giants ruck, who you'd have to say had a shocker of a day. But then that goal celebration, it was so un-Trent-like, wasn't it, BT? You watch him so much and call him so much. But to see, he's such a straight shooter. You know, he keeps his emotions in check so much. But, geez, he really let it out, didn't he?
I reckon because he's changed his game a bit recently, you know, in the last couple of years. And, he's doing a lot of more of those harder, tougher things than perhaps he did at the start of his career. And I reckon that one he just said to himself, okay, you know, I've done all the hard stuff. Now I'm going to join the party and I'm going to help celebrate as well. And I think that's what the goal meant to him. It was just a little bit of a capping on all of the good, hard, solid work he'd done for quite a while.
Where does he sit, Ando, in the scheme of Richmond? I know Benny Gale said on the weekend that a crew of ex-presidents, ex-officials, ex-coaches, they all got together Thursday night before the grand final. And were hypothetically speaking that if Richmond won, where would these guys sit in the scheme of things? Obviously, they had Dustin Martin up there.
Yep.
But, I mean, they haven't done – when was their last team of the century?
Over 20 years ago, yeah. So 1990, so late 90s. From that side on the weekend, excuse me, Dustin Martin clearly gets into it. 2 Norm Smith medals, Brownlow medal, everything else. Alex Rance, who didn't play, gets into it. So they would be in the 18 for Richmond in there if they redid their team of the century. The other
you
two
reckon?
Would be... No doubt that's speaking to an ex-president who had that conversation. This is before Saturday's game. Jack Riewoldt and Trent Cotchin would be right on the edge. That might seem surprising, but your forward line players, Jack would be up against Royce Hart. We're not going to move him from centre-half forward. Jack Titus, who kicked around 1,900-something goals, skinny. He's hard to shift as well. And Matthew Richardson's the other one. So he starts competing with Matthew Richardson.
Well, yeah, and also he's in line with Michael Roach. I know Michael Roach is not in there, but he would have been one that was thought about as well. Now, to me, all of those names, including Roach, Jack's not quite there.
Yep, I think that's a fair call. And the other one is Trent Cotchin starts competing with a Matthew Knights-type player. Now, Trent Cotchin's a dual premiership player and a Brownlow medalist.
That sits you
above, I think it does. I think it puts him ahead of Matthew Knights, as good as Matthew Knights was.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
What about, because this week always tends to be the week about comparisons, what about this flag compared to 2017? It was the drought breaker 2 years ago and everyone was really excited. And I know they were down Swan Street again on Saturday night, but it was a different feeling.
I think that Damien Hardwick suggested this side might be more complete in some ways. He didn't make that comparison as such, but it was just that's the inference I got. Chris Scott, I know, said that before the Richmond Geelong game that Richmond he thought was a better team last year. I'm like, they had Alex Rance in the side last year, but they've added Tom Lynch, obviously, this year. And, well, Marlon Pickett hadn't played at that stage either. But, and Chris was probably playing some games, some mind games anyway. Yeah. But I would have thought that, what Bard said earlier, they need to win another premiership. They're going to have Jack Higgins back, hopefully, in round one. It was a really good player. Mm. Marlon Pickett, Sydney Stack, he'll play in that side. He's too good not to.
Yep.
And Alex Rance is a fairly handy start, isn't it?
Well, the only ones that looks like they'll lose, BT, is Brandon Ellis and Dan Butler. So it's a pretty handy situation to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, look, this one's better, Loz, because they've had to fight the odds. I mean, a couple of years ago when they won their premiership in 17, they had the perfect run. Remember, they hardly had an injury. They could prepare, they could rest. This year they had to... get guys to the line on not enough fitness work. They had to quickly shuffle them in and out of the side according to who they had available any given week. They had the disaster of Rance, which they had to go and find someone that was going to be able to fill his spot. They had a whole host of issues. So for me, this year was definitely harder earned and probably more unlikely that they'd win than ever before, even though I picked them. I think I picked them about 7 weeks out. I thought they were going to be home. To win 12 in a row, something they've never, ever done in the history of the club before. They were pretty together unit come the last 6 weeks of the year, that's for sure.
Right now, who challenges Richmond for the top honours next year?
Gee, I think West Coast will be the one sitting there. West Coast and Collingwood would be the two teams sitting there thinking they could have given a way better performance than GWS and got closer.
Geelong maybe, got to within three goals in the prelim final.
And Geelong I would throw in there as well.
They lose Tim Kelly.
Yep, they lose Tim Kelly. They'll probably pick up Jack Stephen. So not much loss there. I know that a lot of people would look at that and say, hang on a minute, Tim Kelly had a pretty good year. Jack Stephen's won four best and fairest. He goes okay too. So I reckon those sides will still be in the hunt. I can't see anyone else jumping out of the box.
GWS, no? With Cornelio back in the team, with Callan Ward back in the team, with a fit Lockie Whitfield, with a fit Phil Davis. I mean, they went in banged up, didn't they? With a fit Matt the Bull.
You've talked me into. I've slotted him into the top six, but
okay,
not getting into the top three.
Well, while we're on GWS, what I guess will the loss do for them? As you mentioned, Ando, Lockie Whitfield. He was clearly hampered. Phil Davis, I mean, if you're having a fitness test 90 minutes before the bounce,
no.
I think that probably says it all, doesn't it?
Bad signs.
Well, I think I know they spoke about it on the shows on Monday night on Fox Footy, but for your teammates to see it.
I watched that and I was standing on the ground when that fitness test was happening 20 metres away from him. And we could just about hear the conversation with him and the trainers after each run. I'm telling you now, and the body language, and I was interested in Mark Rusciuto's thoughts the other day, who said he didn't think he'd pass. He actually tweeted out
that he didn't think
he'd pass the fitness test. Now, I was standing there with Wayne Carey, and we both said the same thing. I don't think he's passed. His body language says he's not playing. But his body language at least said that he wasn't sure, and neither were the fitness staff. But I don't reckon they had a choice once they got there.
What was actually wrong with him? Do we know that?
No, I don't know. Well, some sort of leg injury.
He declared himself fit beforehand, but it seemed to be anything from a shoulder to a back to an Achilles to a calf, didn't
it? I was told it was a grade 2 tear in the calf, whatever that means.
Well, and with how he played, I mean, the number of marking contests that we saw, he was 3 or 4 feet behind the entire time. It was so unlike him. I guess what, BT, from your point of view, what do they carry from this? That was a huge loss. We saw Port Adelaide belted by Geelong in 07, you know, they took a hell of a long time to bounce back from that. This is a new club. This was their first time on the biggest stage. How do they even go about dealing with it?
So you have a look at their second half of the year. And since the bye, they won 7 games and they lost 6. It wasn't exactly startling, brilliant stuff. It was just their last month where they were able to beat Gold Coast Dogs. I think the other one was Brisbane and Collingwood. You know, they won. In that last 7 weeks, they won one game by 1 point, they won one game by 2, one game by 3, one game by 4. Just an extraordinary sequence in that last bit of the year. But I reckon there's not shame. Shame's too strong a word associated with the performance on the weekend. But for a new team to come back from that, if that was a Richmond team or a Geelong or someone else, I'd say they've got the strength of club and they can probably rise above it and come back and do something. But for a new club to do that, where everything is teetering on the edge, including club support, it's going to be a tough gig for them to get back to grand final day.
There are historical references for them. Collingwood was wiped in 1980 by Richmond, which you would be well aware of, and came back and played in the grand final the next year and didn't lose by much. Essendon in 1983 was wiped by Hawthorn, came back the next year and won the premiership. So it can happen.
Yeah, it was just the way that it happened though too, wasn't it? I mean, they clearly looked tired. We talked about Phil Davis and Lockie Whitfield, but I mean, even with 5 minutes to go in that first quarter, it looked like that was exactly the game that they had wanted it to be. They were right in touch, but geez, once the pile on came,
But that's what Richmond does. I mean, Geelong led them by 3.5 goals at halftime in the prelim final. Second half, that was just an absolute bloody nightmare what was going on with the Richmond. They're just this swarming thing. When you call it, Budge, do you get that sense that they're just running like madmen?
Yeah, a little. I reckon you do. It's a hard thing to gauge at the particular time, but I think your description of it's probably pretty right, Ando.
Chaos. And it, as I say, it worked perfectly for them with the amount that GWS were missing by a foot here and there. It played beautifully into their hands.
Thank goodness they played that way, because otherwise it would have been pretty boring. Thank goodness someone played with some, not efficiency, but some urgency to just get the ball forward in any which way. And I just don't know why clubs don't do that. We saw your mob, Ando, Geelong, the week before, try to play this controlled footy so that, you know. But what it does is that while they have the footy in hand and they're controlling it for that minute or so, but everyone gets forward of the footy then, and it disadvantages their forwards.
Well, Geelong didn't do that in the first half of that game, but then the second half, but they seem to revert back to it. But maybe they've been forced to do that by their opposition. I don't think we perhaps give enough credit to Richmond at times.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned calling at Brian and calling that sort of game style. Take us inside the box on grand final day. We all three of us had very different grand final day experiences. Watched from very different vantage points. But I think I'm certainly interested to know how things go on in the commentary box. We saw a great photo of yourself and Wayne Carey. I think it was Hamish McLaughlin and Bruce McAvaney out on the ground before the game. Just take us through what the day looks like for you. Do you have lines prepared? How does it all work?
It's a structured day in terms of where we've got to be at what sort of time. It's like down to the absolute minute. So for us, it's orchestrated chaos in terms of where we've got to be and when we've got to be there. For instance, we were told that sometime between 11:30 and 11:36, we needed to be in the commentary box, which is extremely early, an hour earlier than we'd normally be there, because Kerry Stokes was going to be coming up to say hello and thanks for the year and stuff. So we're able to meet the chairman and the owner of our company, which was an absolute delight. And he was able to fill us in on what happened over at the state dinner in the US, which was great fun to get the inside running on that. Then from there, various things. 106, I remember Duck and I had to talk about the forwards out on the ground. And then you get to the game. And, you know, all I have, Loz, is everyone's different. So Bruce McAvaney will come armed with a whole host of stuff that he's prepared during the week. And I'm talking 10 pages of work that he's got handwritten notes.
Jeez.
I will come with one page with 3 or 4 points on each side maximum. And I'm thinking those 3 or 4 points I should not have to use at all if the game is really, really good. If the game's not good, I'll cross those off one at a time as I use them. They're just statistical sort of information. But in terms of stuff you're going to say during the game, nothing's prepared for that. So I don't have any lines prepared. I didn't have a line prepared for Richmond if they were to win the grand final, or GWS, what it meant to them. I had no idea what I was going to say. I didn't even know whether I'd be calling in the last 10 seconds of the game. So in terms of preparation of stuff you say, statistically, yes, but certainly not one-liners.
What happens next year with Channel 7, given it's an Olympic year? So Bruce will be absent for quite some time.
July,
August. I'd imagine Hamish may be doing Olympic work. I'm sure he would be with his hosting capabilities. Basil will be doing Olympics in the swimming pool, most likely. So is there room for a young caller to come through with Channel 7?
Yeah, there is, and there will be. So, Jason Bennett and Nige Carmody have been doing the VFL for Channel 7, and I'm sure they'll be required at that particular time, and there might even be a spot for someone else around that time.
I've been practising at home, doing a fair bit of calling, so just keep it in mind, Barge.
Keep that in mind. And there's always guys from South Australia as well, Western Australia, that might be able to fill in for that time. But, yeah, I think I'm the only one holding up.
Loz, who's a young caller you can nominate, someone you've heard? He's not on a TV network at Channel 7 at the moment. You think he's a good caller?
Yeah, there's a few actually. That was going to be my question, my next statement to you, Ando, that we're actually really lucky at the moment because there's a few coming through.
Okay.
I actually was standing next to one in the rooms when we spoke to Marlon Pickett on Saturday after the game, and that's Corbin Middlemass.
Yeah, I'm a Corbin. I'm a
from
Corbin.
The ABC.
I reckon he's a star, Corbin Middlemass.
And Ben Waterworth from Fox Footy. Yeah. He's been doing great things.
You probably don't get the chance to hear those blokes much, Barge, do you?
I haven't heard either of those guys ever call the footy.
Corbin's from Perth via Sydney. Might have even been in Brisbane for a little while. He's come to Melbourne this year and started calling
Of course,
footy.
The only thing I'll say about that is the ABC is very different to calling on commercial TV. Very, very different.
Yeah.
Got to be a different storyteller. I mean, even someone like Jared Waitley, who's, you know, really good on the radio, you know, but he's not calling for Fox, which I'm surprised by and I wonder why. He does call a little bit, well, he calls a little bit for Sen. I think he does one game a week for them. So it's not a lot for a guy that's a pretty good caller.
Whose ultimate ambition would be to replace Bruce McAvaney at Channel 7. I've had that conversation with Jared, and I think he smiled when I raised it. But that would mean he'd go to the Olympics,
Melbourne Cup,
yeah, Melbourne race, spring racing, which he loves. Mm. So to do that, he'd have to have that footy calling side to him.
He would. And to me, there's a young guy by the name of Tony Armstrong, one that you probably he's been calling with the Indigenous station. Did one game with Triple M this year. Young Indigenous boy, I reckon he's probably one that has the potential to come through as well. Yep. Mm. Hasn't called enough so far to know, but from what I've heard, and I've heard some of his practice tapes as well, so I think he'd be pretty good.
Yep, a few in the ranks, so it's always a good position to be in.
The Tigers are premiers for the 12th time in their history. An emotional fest of activity, and it's just a great part of the football journey to watch. A two-time premiership coached him up. Look at this. Greg, who made way for Pickett, and Pickett plays a blinder, and perhaps the best man on the ground, Dusty Martin. Great to see.
New coaches, Ando and BT, they're always the talk of the town, but when they happen so far over in the West, it happened sort of pretty quickly early on Monday morning with Justin Longmuir, didn't it?
Isn't it a boring coaching landscape this year where we've had four coaches, five coaches who have gone, four replacements so far. Every one of them has been the conservative way to go. And I'm not saying they won't be good coaches. They all may all be great coaches, although they probably won't be because there's not enough room for great coaches in the AFL. There's only one each year in terms of a premiership. But I just got surprised that those clubs didn't. Very few clubs go outside the bubble.
Yep.
Hawthorn did it with a guy called Clarkson in 2004. You just they're so scared to go against their members, what their members want them to do.
Well, members want a club person, don't they?
Yeah.
Which Justin is at Freo.
Justin's from that area originally. I heard his press conference yesterday and I was underwhelmed. I'll be honest. That has no bearing on what sort of coach Justin Longmuir is going to be. He's done every bit of football background that he needs to do.
What about when he said, I just want to get these cameras out of my face and get on with it? And I'm thinking, mate, the cameras are going to be there for the entire journey.
Yeah, and I thought straight away, there's another bloke who doesn't like the media, who's not comfortable with the media, like a Don Pike. In the end, it got to Don Pike. Don Pike's a thoroughly decent person, as I'm sure Justin Longmuir is, but I thought Justin was really unimpressive yesterday. And he's talking about Tim Kelly and said, well, you know, one of the best things about Tim Kelly is he's a family person. Well, of course he's a family person. He's got four kids and a wife. Big deal. Yeah. I mean, don't wrap him up that way because you're trying to lure him across.
Well, that's sort of indicative of the new coaching landscape, isn't it, BT? These relationship-building coaches. It started with Damien Hardwick. He spoke so much after the game about the love between his players. And again, on the couch on Fox Footy on Monday night. And Justin is that coach. So, I mean, it just goes to show, doesn't it, that we just are in such a copycat landscape.
But who isn't that coach? Well, in these days, who is one coach who breaks that mould?
Well,
there's no such person.
But what I do know is I do get sick of hearing it. It's like the first time it's ever happened. You know, you hear Buckley or Hardwick saying, oh, this group is just a great group of guys.
Couldn't agree more with it.
Well, I'm here to tell you that back in 1980, when Richmond won the premiership, they were a great group of guys. They were as close as anyone could be. And yes, while their families were slightly on the sideline because it wasn't accepted in those days that they come in the rooms and that sort of stuff, they were there and their families were doing just as great a job. Just because they weren't seen and weren't actually at the game, that meant nothing. And I just get irritated when I hear clubs saying, oh, we only recruit good types, good people at this club.
It was a different kind of bonding back then though, wasn't it? It was drinking in pubs together.
I'm with Brian on that. Coach of that side was a guy called Tony Jewell, who I interviewed just a couple of years after that particular premiership, and said, it was down at Geelong, and Tony, how do you feel? He said, oh, I feel like a beer. Have you got one? Can you go and organise one? Coaches don't say those sort of things these days. He's a comedian.
And the other one was Collingwood in 1990 now, and they weren't the best side in the competition that year. But I tell you what, they were the closest side. They were the side that liked each other the most, and they had great, incredible, high percentage of great camaraderie. Now, these coaches these days are trying to tell us it's new. Hey,
no,
it's not new. It's been there forever.
That Collingwood side, once they got rid of you out of it, that all came together after that.
Exactly.
Made all the difference, Loss.
It's interesting to get your point of view too, speaking of things that coaches say and coaches don't say. The Peter Sumich statement that he put out after the Longmuir appointment.
He's become a Brian Royal figure. Brian Royal was someone who was so close to getting a job 3-4 times. Probably should have got a job, Brian Royal. Never got one. Peter Sumich is now in the same category. And you think maybe at some stage you run out of chances. Is that a fair call, Bart?
Yeah, he's out of chances now. I think he's done. I think he's cooked. I think he's... That comment was really strange, Loz. It was a really strange thing to say for a guy that was in the running for the Fremantle job at the time when he said it. Really weird. No, I think he's done now, Ander.
Yeah, so for those of you that haven't seen it, he put out a written statement after Justin Longmuir was appointed. He says, I had the opportunity to present a well-prepared plan for my future vision of the club. I believe I had the broad support of the wider Fremantle community, players and staff through the process. I've been in the game long enough to know that club decisions are made with all stakeholders, and while I'm disappointed, I'd like to congratulate Longmuir. Goes on and on. I'll sit down with my management team after a bit of time and reflection and plan out my next steps.
A statement born from frustration of missing out, knowing deep down that was the last chance. A Fremantle boy, Peter Sumich, and he craved that job so much. He made a strange comment about Willy Rioli last week.
Yep. I think he was basically suggesting, which while he said it was misconstrued afterwards, that maybe there was something wider going on at West Coast and Willy maybe wasn't the only one.
Yeah, that's the way I read it at the time, which I thought for someone who's in... for a coaching job was a really strange timing.
Yeah, very odd.
But again, who knows? Sumich might have been a great coach himself. But what we do know is coaches these days are extremely sterile in what we get from them what their supporters get from them.
You just touched on Rioli. Just one second on Rioli. Interested in your thought here. What will he get in the end? I'm predicting he'll get under 2 years.
Yeah, I think so too. Look, let's never forget what we know is he's taken a non-performance enhancing substance, which is marijuana, he's tested positive for. That's not his biggest issue, Budge. If that was his sole issue, he'd be back playing possibly later next year. Yeah, tops, I would have thought. But he's tried to cover up a urine sample. And that for a SADA, WADA, anywhere you go, you just do not do that. Having said that, we got a bloke who won the 100 metres at the World Championships in Doha, called Christian Coleman. Chinese.
He was smashing vials. Yeah, and still competing.
That's exactly right. That was Mac Horton's point. But since then, Christian Coleman's won the 100 metres, and talking about athletics, running 9.76. He missed 3 drug tests in the past 12 months.
Never seemed to know his location.
And he's still allowed to compete. That's a total nonsense. And the suggestion there is not that he's had a joint, that he's using performance enhancing anabolic steroids or something of that ilk.
Just doesn't make any sense to me.
Willy Rowley's biggest crime is his naivety, I would have thought.
Well, given that the test that the alleged substitution happened in wouldn't have even tested him.
Yeah, he didn't know that, did he?
But, that was only for performance enhancing.
When that happens, isn't someone there? I guess I've got a son who's been tested that way. And he was a bit shocked by it because he said he won a race at Stawell, 400 metres, a couple of years ago. And as soon as he crossed the line, the drug tester grabbed him and said, I've got to stay with you. You can't leave my sight.
Yep.
And when I say with you, he is right next to him, as close as we are now, Lars. Yeah. And then he went into a room, had to strip naked and the bloke and face the bloke while he urinated into the...
I'll tell you what's gonna happen to avoid situations like this again. I would be surprised if most clubs don't appoint a chaperone.
Yep, I agree.
To go with the drug testers. Now, I was in the rooms. I was actually in the side rooms after the grand final, the Richmond rooms, and the drug testers were there waiting. There were two of them.
Yep.
There waiting the other day. And it was just interesting to watch them, how they go about their work.
Yeah, good luck trying to get a chaperone. They will not allow that.
Yeah.
They won't. There's no way. You can't do that.
I think that's what West Coast were exploring because they went to a few Tigers, didn't they, BT? I think Dustin Martin joked that he'd been with Asada and that's why he was late to the stage. Our producer, Damien Tardio, he said that he saw them go straight to Tom Lynch. So the problem for the Asada chaperone, I think, in the grand final rooms is it's absolute chaos and there's no way of keeping hold of your player.
Just on Dustin Martin, Brian and Loz, where does he sit now? We talk about the great players of the 21st century. Gary Ablett, Chris Judd, that type of player. Is he in that ilk now?
Absolutely.
Well, I'm not sure, Loz. What's he played, 180 games, 200 games, Anna?
He's played about 200 games. He's 28 years old, and he's the number one ranked finals player over the last decade.
Yeah, it's fairly handy.
Under 200 games, there's one part of his career that's yet to play out, and that is a big contributor when comparing, and that is longevity. So, you know, he's got a little way to go on that, and he's probably got to play another three or four seasons for that to be compared. He's got to probably get up around the 280 games.
Okay, and, well, he's at 224, we've just checked now, and he's obviously got 5 years to run still on that deal.
Yeah, 224 games. At least three or four of those years. Yeah.
I would have thought it's a fairly good sample. 224 games.
Mm. Yeah, I love watching him. I don't hide that. I love watching Dusty. What about the Gold Coast boys? Just before we head off, obviously a hell of a package they received from the AFL yesterday. 3 years worth of picks.
If they're going to keep propping up what has become a disaster, a mitigated disaster, the Gold Coast, they are obligated to do what they've done. You can't let them rot. And my biggest issue with Gold Coast is their list management last year decided that a young man called Jared Lyons could be let go for nothing and Brisbane snapped him up. He's going to finish in the top 10 for Brisbane, their best and fairest, potentially top 5. He was an outstanding contributor for Brisbane, exactly the type of player Gold Coast, and they let him go? That should not happen. That's not allowed to happen, that sort of thing.
Well, that's what I was stunned with the announcement from the AFL Commission yesterday was that, like, yes, you're giving them all these picks, but what are you actually putting in place about retention? As you say, Ando, that it's all well and good for the picks to come in, but what are they going to do to try and stop them going out? Now, the AFL's argument is that if they can get some strong young talent up there, obviously your likes of Noah Anderson and Matt Rowell, they're close friends as well. If they go together, start to build what they hope to be a winning culture, they won't want to leave. What if it doesn't happen?
Have they signed their two big, King and Lucasius? That's another issue, isn't it?
Exactly.
So those two boys are still... I mean, it's just...
I reckon King will be back at the end of next year.
Yeah, well, if he hasn't signed, it's a worry, isn't it, already?
I said to someone yesterday, it's almost a bit like when your mum gives you, this is your last $20. If you spend it on lollies, that's on you. There's to be no more to come. You would have to say that all of the other clubs, Ando, will be up in arms if there's more to come after this. They've got to say that this is it.
If I could pick two young players, King and Lucasius, for your club to have right now, they would be right up there. They are just such exciting. And I haven't seen enough of Rankin to know where he sits. But if they don't keep them, it's just the biggest disaster. And the AFL will get involved. Mm-hmm. They'll do something to make it.
If they lose Jack Martin as well, I mean, there's talk about him. You know, so if they lose him as well.
You've got Tom Lynch running around the weekend with Dion Prestia, Josh Caddy via Geelong. You've got O'Meara somewhere else. Harley Bunnell, I know he hasn't hurt them, but he could easily have hurt them. He's, Charlie Dixon's over, and it just goes on and on. GWS, on the other hand, have managed to not really lose a Jeremy Cameron or a Stephen Cornelio, a Toby Green. Callum Ward, Phil Davis, those players have all stopped.
Not recently, have they? Obviously, Taylor Adams, Adam Treloar, those.
Taylor Adams is one that they would have loved to have kept.
Yep.
But don't forget, they were both given, particularly GWS, they were given loaded lists. So, and they knew that after a certain period of time, they had to trade some of those really good players out because they weren't going to be able to sustain them all financially in that period of time. But that was the way it started. Just it gave them something to trade with. And that's why Treloar and Adams and these other guys aren't there now, because someone had to go.
I hope the Gold Coast come good. I always go back to round 16, 2014, when Gary Ablett, they were in the eight, comfortably in the eight, with Guy McKenna coaching. Gary Ablett did his shoulder in a tackle from Brett McCaffer, and that was it. They haven't fired a shot since then.
Tim Kelly?
Tim Kelly goes.
To West Coast?
Whoever gets the best deal. I think West Coast.
It'll be very interesting. We'll obviously be following all the trades news very, very closely, Ando. It's an industry in itself, isn't it, over the next few weeks. At heraldsun.com.au, the boys will be absolutely all over the trades. BT, Ando, and of course Robbo's not with us today, but it's been a great season. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Loss. Enjoyed it. Thanks, Barge.
Thanks, Loss.
Thank you to all of those who fielded along the way too. Sam Edmund, Jay Clark, Scotty Gullen. It was a bit of a who's who this season. So thanks to everyone. Thanks to all of you, of course, for joining us each and every week here on the Super Footy Podcast, brought to you by TAB. Make sure you stay tuned throughout the summer. There'll be a range of podcasts and great stories to be told. But we'll see you next year.